Hey guys, thanks for listening to Kinda Dating, the comedy dating podcast where I, your host Natasha Chandel, and some cool guests break down the dating world and try to figure out, why the fuck do we all have commitment issues? Today's topic, as a brown girl, is half of my life. It's interracial love, mixing and mingling in a post-Trump world. Let's do this. Thank you so much for listening to Kinda Dating. Hey guys, just as a reminder, please follow us on socials at Kinda Dating. And if you can take a second and subscribe and review us on iTunes, Google Play, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher, wherever you find us, we would really, really appreciate it. So let me start with a stat. In 1987, Pew found that only 13% of Americans completely agreed that interracial dating was acceptable. That share grew to 56% in 2009. They say young people are even more open-minded. Roughly 9 in 10 millennials say they'd be okay with a family member marrying someone of another race or ethnicity. Thank God, because really, it's about time. We're all pretty mixed here. To talk about this subject, I have a good friend, and this is a fun crossover episode because he's also a meltdown host here of Pod Sequentialism. I have here Matt Kennedy. Hi, how are you?
Hi, and I mean, and I am the absolute whitest person that you could have selected for this topic, and probably the appropriate white person.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, appropriate white person because you have a Japanese wife.
Yes. Yes, yeah. I do.
And, you know, so I feel like that makes you sort of qualified enough to talk about the subject.
I mean, it's funny that I think that, well, I've been married to two Japanese women with the exact same name, which is kind of funny and weird. But that's probably part of my collector mentality. And we'll talk about that in a different show. But seriously, I guess that, I don't know if it's because I came from the Northeast. And I think that it was a little bit more... like, we didn't face the same type of necessarily shock about interracial relationships, that pretty much once I left Massachusetts, I almost exclusively dated outside of Caucasians.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is Caucasians even still a thing anymore?
I think they do say it. Yeah. I mean, though I feel like it's pretty acceptable, you tell me, to say white people.
Well, I can say cracker, but you can't say cracker.
No. Yeah,
it'd
those
be pejorative.
Words are... harsh. Tell us a little bit about Pod Sequentialism also before we jump into everything, because I want people to know about your show.
Yes, yes. If you enjoy this podcast, then you will hopefully also enjoy my show, Pod Sequentialism, with Matt Kennedy. And my show tackles the kind of DIY aspects of creative fields, so not just comic books, although that was kind of the idea that it jumped out of. And I had curated a show about comic book art called Pop Sequentialism, so we figured, oh, pop to pod, and then I get to keep my original copyright on Pop Sequentialism and talk to people that I know that make films or do comics or do music or are scientists, and bring back into the kind of diaspora of things that people are interested in science fiction and comics, issues that don't get talked about.
Mm-hmm. What about the issue of diversity?
I actually just posted today a link back to the third episode, which was all about diversity. And it was a podcast version of a blog post I had written in 2009 about the lack of diversity in comics, specifically the lack of gay superheroes, which at the time I had written it, there were very few, and it was generally very poorly handled.
Mm-hmm.
And since we've got, as we record this, tomorrow is the inauguration. This will probably air a few weeks later.
Yeah.
But, you know, very fresh in everybody's mind about the fear of what strides we've made in the last 8 years of stepping back.
Yeah, I think that's another reason I wanted to talk about this now, was because it is, I mean, the next 4 years are going to be a post-Trump era. That's not to say that, right?
Yeah.
That's not to say that, and I want to be very clear about this, because I say that, but that doesn't mean that I believe that anybody who is a supporter or voted for Trump is, you know, some kind of white supremacist or anything like that. Because my parents, Indian parents, are supporters of Trump. So, you know,
he did connect.
That's okay.
He connected in a really visceral level with, I mean, his campaign used a lot of neurolinguistic programming. And if you watched him speak, his repetition of certain slogans and saying them again and again, whether or not they were true, it just became accepted. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we've seen usually dictators, but we've seen a lot of successful politicians use that type mm-hmm. of approach to phraseology. And now, because he's all over Twitter and social media, he's really condensed. And it's funny, and this is interesting, because he's somebody who's married to an immigrant.
Yes.
And you wonder sometimes that if in his daily communications, is he simplifying English because his wife doesn't speak perfect English, and is mm-hmm. that carried over into his personality, or is he just not a big fan of big words?
Yeah, I mean, I have definitely noticed that myself. He uses a lot of simple words, like great and fantastic yeah. and very good and
tremendous.
Sad.
Tremendous is the biggest word
tremendous.
I think he's ever used.
But you know, I think the layman gets it, and
he's going to get it.
Yeah.
You know, bent over.
And so the reason, again, we bring it back to this concept of interracial love is because I do think that there has been a racial divide. There is a strong racial divide that I think is surfacing again mm-hmm. Recently,
yeah.
which has always been really strange for me because I'm Canadian.
Yeah.
And not to say, hey, listen, Canada's not perfect. And back in the day, if you talk to some of, you know, my friend's parents who'd been there 30, 40 years ago, mm-hmm. they faced racism back there too.
Or, yep.
And, but it's such a different society. It's just not something that we think about. And we're just so used to everybody and so many different types of religions and people. And it's just so normal there.
And indigenous peoples who are not strictly white people.
Mm-hmm. And it's a country of immigrants, of
yeah.
people who are proud to be immigrants.
But
you know?
A large section of the population, you know, mm-hmm. Indigenous peoples in Canada make up more, I think, more than 30% of the population. Mm-hmm. And of course, 95% of the population lives within 3 miles of the border of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's a gigantic country, there's a lot of really not very hospitable terrain. And so the populations get really small. And I imagine out there, you might have more of that kind of trapper, you know, mentality that I think people who don't travel the country a lot think that most of the Midwest is like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That they think that there's, you know, just it's all rural and people don't live close to each other and they get afraid of new things, and that causes a fear of, you know, people with new cultures and new skin colors. And I think it's different in the United States.
It's so different.
Because
really
different.
When I came here, and I remember I moved to New York from Toronto, mm-hmm. everybody said to me, New York is the melting pot. And I would go here, and when I moved, I was like, I don't see any form of a melting pot. There are different
yeah.
types of people, but everybody's very segregated
yeah,
in their own types of groups.
Yeah.
I felt like but I mean, I'll just keep it at that. Everybody was kind of in their own groups, even Indians. Like, I didn't have a lot of Indian friends because I didn't know where the hell they were. I was like, where the fuck are you? I can't find you in the city. And but then I realized, oh, they're in this like one pocket over yeah. here that I don't go to because
it's
I don't live in that area.
Live.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Canada, it's just, or in Toronto at least, it's just not like that. Where
yeah.
I grew up, it wasn't like that. So the whole concept of racial divide has always been weird for me, and I've never understood it. And I'm always just sort of like, I don't get it. It's really that just like one is tanner than another. I don't understand how that makes anybody different.
Well, here's an interesting way of looking at it, possibly. And because you're from India, you know that there's a caste system in India. There
yeah.
is definitely a caste system
yeah.
in the United States. We just don't call it that.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's not so much a birthright as it is a socioeconomic mm-hmm. Ideal. And I think that because slavery held on in the United States for centuries after it had gone away in other parts of the world, that we're really only about 150 years, not even yet 150 years away from, you know, the abolitionist movement.
Mm-hmm.
And then a president who was assassinated 20 years after Lincoln, who was Garfield, was a very pro civil rights president in his day. And if he had not been assassinated, I wonder if the civil rights movement wouldn't have happened 60 mm-hmm. years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And Chester Arthur, who replaced him, was kind of a puppet for the New York crime or New York syndicates. And to his credit, didn't go along with the ride. But if you look at the way that history shakes out, and we've seen, this is sort of like an assassination that doesn't get paid attention to at all, but had a much bigger impact mm-hmm. on American interracial relationships, relations, you know, across the board, including Native Americans, African former slaves, and the children of former slaves, because it was in that time frame that by him dying, that it was a reset.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Mm.
But, you know, at the end of the day, these are beliefs and perspective that are carried on from generation to generation. And yep. it was interesting because you pointed out the fact that I am Indian, and in India, there's a caste system.
Mm-hmm.
Funny enough, I didn't know a caste system existed in India because I did live there for a year when I was six. And I played with the maid's kid.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know, and my parents never stopped me, and mm-hmm. it was fine. And she was like one of my really close friends, and I was cool with it. And they were, you know, I'd invite her for food, and mm-hmm. it's cool. It was only when I, you know, where I learned
Dubai.
That India had a caste system in 10th grade religion class, world religion in my Catholic high school.
Oh.
And I thought this was, I was like, how dare you say India has a caste system? I got so angry and yeah. I went home and I like riled my, I was like, you know what they're teaching us in school? That India has a caste system. And they're like, oh no, it does. It's just we never taught you.
So we're like, both survivors of Catholic school, which is interesting.
But it just to show you that it's really what we're taught
yeah.
that we carry forward, because I never knew any better or yeah. anything different. And that's what I think is great about this stat, is that now roughly 9 in 10 millennials say that they'd be okay with a family member marrying someone of another race or ethnicity. And I went to this great, it was this cross-cultural summit that Disney was putting on, and it was about Generation Z. And it said the three defining traits of Generation Z, which is, for those wondering, anyone 18 and younger at this point, so not the millennials, mm-hmm. The generation after us, that the three defining traits of Generation Z are diversity, inclusion, and justice, which is beautiful.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. And so I do think that, you know, the mindset's changing, but there's still some silly things that go on, right?
Yeah.
That's what I want to talk about.
I'm Gen X, you know, so,
yeah.
And what you say is true, is that, you know, that your attitude towards people is, it's inherited. It's something you learn at home when you're young. And unless you find through your interactions with other people that what we're taught at home is wrong,
mm-hmm.
then you can take bad habits through the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And I certainly, as you know, an elementary school kid, told racist jokes
mm-hmm.
because it was part of the culture, you know, and said insensitive things until I hit a point where I realized that that was moronic
mm-hmm.
and hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that was the biggest thing. Like, aside from the fact that it was dumb to do that type of stuff, and that you'd see certain people do dumb things and get applause, that it was hurtful. Like, I saw that it was personally hurtful to other kids in my class. And having not thought about that, not having seen personally how that type of unkind speech and what we would now call outright hate speech was absolutely flagrant in elementary
wow.
schools in the 1970s.
Wow.
And I'm from Massachusetts. And like I say, you know, a lot of people think of, you know, Boston as being like this kind of cradle of democracy. And a friend of mine recently said, you know, well, Massachusetts could be one Kennedy short of Tennessee, and you could be that Kennedy, you know, like, mm-hmm. and it's like scary to think about, but
yeah.
it was true. And I have to cop to that. It's like, I see a lot of people, and they'll shoot something down on Facebook, and they'll act very holier than thou. And I'm kind of like, you're the same age as I am,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I knew you growing up,
mm-hmm.
and if I really wanted to lay some hurt down, I would say what I personally witnessed, you know, when we were kids. But it's, you know, it's they're either going to get it or they're not going to get it. My family was pretty divided. My immediate family were all very much in support of Hillary Clinton once she got the nomination.
Right.
And I've got cousins in Massachusetts that are staunch Trump supporters, and to this day are staunch Trump supporters.
Yeah.
And because they see a different local economic situation than I do in California, we do live in a bit of a bubble, but hopefully we can lead by example.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's great that, you know, you were honest enough to say and have the awareness that, hey, when I was younger, I did some stupid things, but mm-hmm. we all grow up and we change. And that's awesome. So I know for me, growing up, it was so weird because, again, I just never saw people from color or based on a color. And I've always... One of the reasons I always wanted to do the show was because I've dated, like I called myself an equal opportunity dater. I've dated every race, every kind of background,
I think
religions.
I've dated every country at this point in
exactly.
my life.
And,
I'm missing maybe five.
Right?
You know, I'm not sure if they were actually countries when I was in my 20s.
Yeah. And I remember, and you know, again, as a millennial, this is weird to say, but when I was 15, I dated this boy that I didn't even really like that much, but everybody was like, you know, he really likes you. And I'd never had a boyfriend. I was like, okay, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And he was Caucasian. And it was so weird because I didn't think it would be a deal. And suddenly, literally the entire high school turned on me. And it was like everybody who's Caucasian started saying, how the fuck or why the fuck is he with a brown girl? And everybody who was a person of color started saying, who the hell does she think she is?
I'm making a shocked face, which you can't see.
Saying, who the hell does she think she is dating? Like, and I actually remember being
in
art
this?
Class. This is in Toronto. And this is so I mean, these things do happen in everywhere, including Canada.
This sounds like an episode of Degrassi.
Right? Probably was. Maybe
I learned to boot it on Degrassi.
No, I had two guy friends. I remember very close friends of mine who came up to me in art class as I was sitting just doing my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they came up to me like hovering. And they were very tall, and I was little. And they go, you think you're better than us? And I was like, huh? And they were talking about the fact that I was dating this guy. Uh-huh. And there came a point that one and a half month relationship where I did nothing with this dude turned into the definition of what my high school legacy was in terms of... In that 1.5 months, I had people writing shit about me in bathrooms. Suddenly, like, everybody had turned on me and they were like, slut, this, that, da, 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 talking about my brother. I was like, what is happening? I didn't even know this was a thing.
Yeah.
And then, but of course, once that did happen, I started realizing who people were. And that was the first time I was like, wow, this shit matters to people.
Amazing,
it never stopped
right?
me.
Yeah.
and I, you know, I have... happily dated whoever I think I've had a connection with.
Mm-hmm.
But I always remembered that. You know, again, the stupid things people say and that they ask you, have you heard stupid things? I mean, and not just like these crazy stories.
I don't want to repeat them in as a fear of you know, propagating
like,
certain stereotypes,
yeah.
But I was absolutely asked, you know, after the first Asian girl I dated, one of my friends asked me if their vaginas went side to side rather than up and down.
Oh my God.
And I was just kind of like, really? Like, don't you watch porn?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, which is like the most ridiculous, dumb thing. And they were asking it completely earnestly.
Yeah.
Completely earnestly.
Yeah. I mean, look, I get asked all this. I get such dumb questions all the time in terms of, you know, I've had a few black boyfriends. Mm-hmm. And my boyfriend now is he's mixed. He's half white, half black. I've definitely been asked the like, is it better? Is it bigger? And
is
I'm
it
just
bigger?
Like, you know what, guys?
Well, here's a really interesting statistic. So according to Nina Hartley, who was an adult film actress for 40 years, I think she's still in the business. I was at an event where somebody asked her, you know, since you've been with everybody, and mm-hmm. she's like, who has, you know, the biggest penis? And she, without missing a beat, said Jewish men.
You know, they do come in second for me.
I'm an Irish Catholic, so I lose every which way. But so I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, I also get the, like, anytime somebody knows I'm dating somebody that's not Indian, mm-hmm. the immediate question is, so what do your parents think?
Yeah.
Like, my parents are grown, educated people. They don't think anything.
Yeah.
They're like, cool, does he treat you nicely? Mm-hmm. I mean, mind you, would my parents maybe when I was younger prefer me to have been with an Indian guy just because they felt culturally maybe they would, you know, there would be symmetry. Mm-hmm. But they've learned that, you know, even from seeing my dating experiences, my longest relationships have been with Indian guys, mm-hmm. is that never makes it better.
Let's get a time frame. So longest relationship, how long was your longest relationship?
I'm not giving you time frames here. No, that was 4 years. It was four years.
That's legit. That's
so it was
a long
basically
time.
When I was 12. And
it was 1/3 of your life, yeah. And it became 1/4 of your life.
Right.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, over the years, they've just learned that people are defined by their character. And it really is that it's, you know, they've seen some people who aren't Indian, who've treated me very well and are good to me and are smart and are educated and all those things that they would want and actually have more of the same values than somebody who's that. Mm-hmm. That's not to say I haven't been with great Indian guys who have also shared those values with me. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because people always ask me that, like, so what do your parents think?
Yeah.
And I'm like, guys, I'm not like a 12-year-old trying to rebel against my parents.
Well, you know, my parents were very much people of their era, too. And mm-hmm. so my father was born in 1929. He passed away in 2001. But and my mom was born in 32, and she's very, very, well, she's 80, should be 84 this year, 85, she'll be 85 this year if she lives through the year. And, you know, because they're from that era, you know, they're not even baby boomers, you know, they're before that. They're like the greatest generation, I guess, is what they were being called for a long time. And the stuff I heard in my house was very much like what we saw on television on All in the Family. I mean, like my dad.
Great show, though, guys.
Yeah.
And so racist, but so fucking great.
Well, the character is a racist and you learn something uh-huh. about yourself mm-hmm. when you watch that show.
Yeah.
And when you realize how it was being framed. But I don't think my dad knew that the show was about him. Like, you know, that, and he was, you know, I guess I can say he was a civil servant,
right?
And he's the second oldest in a house of like 14 kids, you know, 10 kids, and then there was adoptions and people died, you know, people died still when they were young, in the 1930s, but the growing up in that environment was illuminating. In that I knew it was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And when my brother, who is quite a bit older than me, where the book ends, I'm the youngest, he's the oldest, and there's four girls in between, so I never saw a bathroom until I was a teenager. But when he picked me up from the airport when I was first getting married to my ex-wife, who is also Japanese and also named Ai, and the things that he said, and he was trying to be, you could tell he was on his best behavior, but he was also just Irish Catholic, American Irish Catholic blockhead. And he was like, oh, well, you know, it's, she's like, he's like, well, so what are you, are you Chinese, are you Japanese? And my ex-wife answered, she's like, Japanese. I go, say, it's all good. He's like, you know, it's like, it's, you know, because that was a long time ago. If you were Vietnamese, that might be a problem, you know? And I was just thinking, I was like, oh my God. I'm like, I forgot I'm back parents. In Massachusetts,
right.
You know? And my parents didn't say anything. They're actually really, really, you know, cool about it.
That's nice.
But if she had been African-American,
yeah,
that might have been a very big issue for my father.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, I've got you know, nieces and nephews who are mixed race, and just spent some time with some grandnieces and nephews who are mixed race. And it's almost inconceivable that it's not even that far from the point where my dad died that, like, he'd have been so disturbed by it, I think,
right.
in a weird way.
Yeah.
Except, again, that there'd be family and he'd be okay with it.
Yeah. I feel like that is sometimes, like, just the way to break them.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a scientific reason of why you should pursue interracial relationships. But first, let's pay the bills. Hey guys, welcome back. This is Kinda Dating, and I'm Natasha Chandel, and I'm here with Matt Kennedy talking about interracial love. So I said that I was going to give you a scientific reason as to why you should date people of different ethnicities.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a geneticist friend
mm-hmm.
who said it's called unmasking of genes.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, so if a couple... If a couple has a kid, an interracial couple has a kid, that kid obviously gets a lot of benefits of both parents' genes. But when that kid has a kid, it unmasks the best qualities of the grandparents' genes into that child. So you are then creating some form of a super kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So whatever your best qualities and genes are, will be unmasked, but in your grandchild, which, I mean, I've always said that I think mixed kids are like God's gift for mingling.
Look at the Czech Republic.
He's just like, look, I'm going to give you gorgeous babies.
Yeah, the Czech Republic.
I
think they kill ugly babies in the Czech Republic
because
everybody is beautiful. Like, everybody is gorgeous. It's ridiculous. So you feel like there's a secret. There's this room where if the kid comes out and it's not absolutely gorgeous, they just throw it in a pile.
That's so wrong.
It is so wrong. I apologize. But no, I agree with that. I think that's probably very, very true. And the ability to fight the types of infections that seem to latch onto specific blood types.
Mm-hmm.
So... sickle cell anemia is very well known as a condition that only invades African bloodlines. So not just African Americans, but it could be African European, mm-hmm. African South American, and that type of thing. And there's a couple of conditions that only affect Levantine blood. So primarily Arab blood. But because Arab blood and a couple of close ethnic neighbors, so Israel and the Saudi Peninsula, people born in that area can, even though they're not strictly of the same exact ethnicity, are open and susceptible to a specific type of a virus, similar to the West Nile virus, that only latches onto that. And if you split the genes and the blood, then you eliminate the possibility of that infection to manifest upon that next generation.
See? More fucking reasons, guys. We're going to get rid of all of the diseases in the world.
Yeah.
Also, you know what I love about you, Matt, is you're like a fucking encyclopedia.
I always
like,
have been.
He literally...
I'm the most annoying person in the world,
no,
quite literally.
No, it's awesome. You literally have... You don't have a phone. You don't have like some notes in front of you. This is just you spewing awesome facts, which are great.
I never slept as a child. That was a problem. I remember everything.
So, okay. So, people... Okay, if you get into an interracial relationship, mm-hmm. there are pros and cons. I mean... And I don't even say pros and cons, but there are there's still challenges and mm-hmm. there are great wins in that.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the great wins are you learn about new cultures mm-hmm. and new people. And I've learned so many great things about, you know, when I dated a Jordanian guy or when I dated a Jewish guy or mm-hmm. when I dated a black guy, you know, about the culture and the food and the family.
Never learned anything from an Irish Catholic. I can tell you that right
hey,
now.
Hey, no, that's not true. You know, my best friend, I mean, I haven't dated her, but I do call her my soulmate.
Mm-hmm.
She's Irish Catholic. And, you know, I mean, I learned y'all can handle your liquor. And
we all have hollow legs. That's where that liquor
and
goes.
You're very warm people. I mean, mm-hmm. they've been very warm to me.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of great things about everybody. But there's still challenges, right?
Yeah.
There's still some, and let's, you know, let's keep it real,
mm-hmm.
of having dated people. Like, I feel like if somebody dates me, they're going to be weirded out. Like, Indian culture is so, it's such a shock sometimes. My father is an astrologer.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, newsflash, guys. Yes, my dad sees the future.
Yeah,
no.
My friend Daniel's mom is an Ayurvedic technician.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like my sister-in-law's dad is an Ayurvedic doctor. Mm-hmm. My dad is a Vedic astrologer. You know, the types of foods and the weird things sometimes we have to do for a long time. Growing up for years, maybe 12 years, I wasn't allowed to eat meat on Tuesdays. And he was like, it's because, you know, it's to help you get a good husband.
Mm-hmm.
Bitch, I'm still single. Well, I'm not single, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not married. There ain't no ring on that finger. But these were weird things I had to explain to boyfriends. And unless they were Indian, like Indian guys would be like, yeah, yeah. Like they
right.
knew we had to, what
like,
we had
let's
to
get
deal
a hamburger
with.
Anyways. Yeah.
Yeah. And other people would be like, why do you have to do that? And I was like, look, just some things you just accept. Just yeah. take it as like a face value. I can't give you like a whole fucking, you know. Reason for it, but have there been right. those like weird things, like both ways? That,
certainly, yeah.
That are still kind of challenges of like learning about the other person and where they come from, and
I definitely, you know, having and I've like I say, I think if I had a checklist, and I don't, and it had every country in the world on it. There's not a lot of empty boxes
yeah.
at this point in my life, and that's maybe extraordinary. Considering that, you know, I'm 45 years old, and I was married for 7 years. And so that's a big chunk of time that is just one, you know, one woman. And that Japanese specifically, because I've had several long relationships with Japanese women, that it's interesting to me how different their backgrounds are being from two different cities in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
My ex-wife was from a suburb of Tokyo, and my wife is from Osaka. And it's a different attitude, and there's different types of little personality differences. But also, my ex-wife was a middle child of three, and my wife now is an only child. And so you have differences that might not necessarily be cultural differences,
yeah.
but maybe, you know, more general differences within a specific
mm-hmm.
cultural frame. And an inability to express oneself is a very common thing, especially among the Japanese in general. And that's, it's every, anybody who's Japanese would say that's absolutely true. And with women, it is even more so.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's different to me is, you know, my ex-wife's family were younger and not very conventional. And my wife's family now, they're very conventional, and they're both at retirement age now and are just retiring. So when I first went to Japan to visit with my future in-laws the first time, there was a fear that I wasn't going to be accepted because mm-hmm. I was, you know, a white guy from America, and I was an actor, which is probably even worse at the time. And before we got married, you know, with my wife now, I had to fill out basically a resume. I had to give a life history of where I went to school,
mm-hmm.
every job I had had, like because they didn't know me.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was marrying their daughter. She was yeah. in America. And that was kind of odd and daunting. And I was like, I didn't think this is something I would have to do, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, different foods, you know, there's a lot. It's a different diet for sure.
Yeah.
And I wish I ate more like my wife does. I have a shellfish allergy, and actually she developed one after we got together, which is weird.
Yeah, that's yeah. super weird.
Yeah, my genetics take over.
Yeah, you're right, though. Like, we do sort of bubble everybody into one group. Like, you go, oh, you're from Japan. You must, you're from all of Japan. All
yeah.
of Japan is the same.
You are now my ambassador to Japan.
Exactly. But yes. when you think about it, it's like a New Yorker is so different from a Texan.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, nobody, like, but we find it so weird sometimes. And we're
yeah.
like, oh, yeah. I mean, same with us. North Indians are very different from South Indians, even in
yes.
food and language and everything.
Yes.
So what's the difference between, you know, because there we're obviously talking about like real love, but there's a difference between like an admiration and love for just everybody and a fetish. How do you distinguish, or is there a way to distinguish when somebody has like a fetish for?
For Asian?
Or no, for anything. Because like I have girlfriends who, like one of my really close friends, she has literally only ever dated black guys and she's Caucasian. But that's not because she has like a literal fetish for them. She's just like, that's really all I've dated and been attracted to. And I understand that. I know Indian guys who don't date anybody unless they're Indian.
I think a lot of that type of, I mean, what we may call fetishism, and I mean, we could have a deep conversation about what defines fetishism, but I think that having dated women of many cultures and many sizes and shapes, that I started to zero in on, you know, how my body matches up with the body that I'm going to be having sex with. And in order to avoid awkward physical interactions, you know, of like the parts of the body just that don't line up right, I tend to date girls that are my height. And most girls that are my height are Asian because I'm really short. You know, I'm like on a bad day, I'm 5'4", and on a good day, I'm 5'5½ probably. But that part of, you know, because of that, because I know that that is established from my experience, that would tend to be something that I would look for. But what's funny is that when I first moved to LA, I loved Latinas. I could not get enough Latinas, and they wanted nothing to do with me. And when I got older, it sort of switched. It was like I became more attractive to a really specific demographic of Latina girls. And I think it was it can be any number of cases of why culturally it's, in certain groups, and this would all be in LA and in probably in one of four or five cities where there's going to be a commonality in the way that all of them grew up sociologically, but the dynamic within their families would be different. And so your friend who's only dating black men, I mean, it's like she probably dated one guy and it was great and was like, well, now I know what I'm looking for. And I'll just keep looking for that one thing. And then it could be having a bad experience where you're like, ah, I need a change. You know, it's like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to look for this thing, you know, or this thing or this quality or this career. Like, oh, I think I only want to date girls in this career, which could be a thing. And you may realize that that particular industry has a high percentage of a specific type of ethnic you know, makeup.
But sometimes I just think it's also like a simple attraction thing. I mean, you don't really control it. I don't really actively think about the type of guy. I mean, for me, they've all looked very different. But I could see why some people are attracted to a type, you know? And and if you've established your type early on and you know that that's your type, then fuck, all the power to you. What the fuck do I care?
I'm already blonde. I don't need more blonde in this relationship.
Exactly. Do you think people, how long do you think that they'll still be surprised by
interracial romance? I mean, in certain places in the world, if there's not enough access to the rest of the world, and if we're not getting the proper role models on television, then it may never change in certain areas. One of the reasons why I think that I've supported such a big, and I've actively kind of spoken about this, that I feel like we need more people of color on television and movies, because aside from leaving role models off the table for people in those cultures and in those creeds, that it's also not showing people who aren't in those cultures and aren't in those creeds that people are generally the same. You know, that good people are good people, and it doesn't necessarily matter what the color of your skin is or what your belief system is, but that a good person is a good person. And I think that if they get used to seeing good people on TV that don't look like them, then when they see people who do look like this other person, they may think, oh, that they're probably a good person because I've seen this good person on television. And I think, you know, I talked about the social engineering aspect of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and what an amazing social engineering exercise that was. But it was very specific, you know, that at that time on television, there weren't a whole lot of African-American males on television, but they found this really personable guy who was kind of light-skinned, who was classically kind of good-looking by almost anybody's standards, and he was very successful. You know, he didn't look like Wesley Snipes. Wesley Snipes is a tough-looking, darker-skinned African-American man who was gotten used to playing villains. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't going to build a series around him. And so we need more of this type of expansion. We, you know, we've gotten in the door and we need to expand it. We need to have, you know, a lot of main characters in shows have other people in their lives who aren't necessarily the same color and creed that they are to reflect that fact across the board. But what we're seeing, especially post-election, we talk about being in the Trumpian era, that things are starting to separate back, that it's like there's going to be a lot more of people just hanging out in their own cultures because the that fear has enticed a specific demographic into active action against change.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what it seemed to have been a weird referendum in this election was, it was a reaction against too much change too quickly for a lot of people. Yeah. And we don't see that in California because we're used to it, you know. And but once you get in Orange County and once you get out into Bakersfield, you're back into not really the California that people who live in the major cities know of as California.
Yeah, I mean, I put a lot of faith in these next couple generations of people and kids out there. And I think
that's why we can't let them be homeschooled.
Yes.
You know, like this is this whole weird thing. We just saw an embarrassing Senate subcommittee hearing on the person who's going to take over the Department of Education who doesn't believe in schools, you know. And it's like, if you don't have kids going to school with people, with
and
other kids that don't look exactly like them and they don't develop social skills, it's incredibly dangerous. I mean, we're already seeing this lack of empathy from the tech sector and the fact that, you know, the new you know, kind of bro-y dudes are, you know, computer bro-y dudes, you know, that they have the same kind of backwards ideas about and misogynistic views that we used to associate with like football players or something in teen sex comedies in the 80s. And what's interesting is now that's kind of reversing. It's like people in sports programs have to abide by a certain social code of conduct or else they can't play for the team. So they actually tend to be a little bit more respectful. And the geeks are like, girls didn't like me when I'm young, so I hate everybody.
Yeah.
And I have money and this girl better like me. You know, like the rich, good-looking kid who went on like a shooting spree in Santa Barbara, who was the son of a film producer. And it's like, it's entitlement based on this disconnect associated with social media where we're not seeing people in public the same way. You know, look how we date now. You know, if you're in the open market, you hold your phone and you swipe your finger across people's faces until you find a person that you think is attractive, and then you read their stats and then you go on a date with them. And the only thing you know about each other is this fiction of yourself that you've told to a program on a phone. And people aren't falling in love. You know, they're fulfilling a very important basic sexual need, maybe, but it's a real disconnect. And I think that that's dangerous. And if I'm the voice of, you know, like ethical sexual value, then we've hit a really interesting place in the world.
Though, you know, as a millennial, I'll play devil's advocate, that I do think that you're probably getting more of an initial information about somebody from swiping right and going on a date with somebody from Tinder than I would necessarily of some guy coming up to me at a bar.
Oh, yeah, sure.
The interaction is different and the quality of the interaction is different. Mm-hmm. But the amount of information I actually have about this person,
if it's already true.
That's another story. Trust me, we will do an episode on catfishing one day. And my goal is to have Neve from MTV here. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying. That said, I think, and please, I'd love to know your thoughts. Mm-hmm. The best experiences, like the best part of dating for me has been dating all different types of people. Mm-hmm. And connecting with whoever it is I connected with, even if it was the same type, that's fine for whoever is out there and is connecting to the same type. But for those who are exploring and just being free, be free and enjoy, because the best lessons, like, and the best life view I've gotten is being with people and seeing the world through other people's eyes that I never got a chance to see.
And if you're going to take naked selfies, disconnect your phone from the cloud.
Yeah. And just don't do them. That's another show I want to do. Aisha knows. I've been talking about that forever. The sexting show.
Yep.
God, guys, you're going to hear a whole other side of me on that. So,
woohoo!
Thank you so much for talking about this. This is a tough subject and deep, and I feel like we went in a very different direction than I thought we were going to go, but I love it.
Yeah. But I want to address something, too, because you mentioned it, and you were talking about, you know, fetishism, and clearly, and I know a ton of Asian girls, and Asian girls your age, and I run an art gallery, and there's a lot of Asian artists, and I hear the horror stories, and there is definitely a elevated level of fetishism, at least in Los Angeles, around Asian girls. And
I think it's everywhere.
Well, it's funny, though, but if you look, someone just recently ran data on the most searched subcategories on porn sites by men and by women, and the bottom of the male search was Asian.
Hmm.
Like,
but you know, in online dating, they say the most sought after a female in online dating is an Asian female.
Yeah. And it may be the types of guys who are joining the service.
Right.
You know, that may speak to the mindset of someone who uses an online dating service at this particular moment in time. And I met my wife on an online dating service.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was after having many disastrous interactions of online dating.
Yeah.
That's a whole show, too.
Uh-oh. Hey, we've all had our with all of it. So
I'm amazed I didn't wind up in a tub with a scar, you know.
Thank God.
Yes.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be here talking about interracial love.
I might be jaundiced. I might be here and be jaundiced.
Matt, thank you so much for being on the show, but we're not done.
All right.
We've done
good.
This on your
I wasn't
show.
Ready to go, yeah.
We've done this on your show before, but not on our show.
That's true.
I appeared on Podsequentialism, so check that episode out on Podsequentialism's iTunes. Mm-hmm. We do something called Five Questions here. So I want to know, Matt Kennedy, here are your five questions. Mm-hmm. What is the first thing you notice about a potential partner?
Okay. Now, so the By using potential partner, I'm going to assume that we've already been on a date. So it's not like, hey, I see a good looking girl or something. But like once I'm spending time around that person, the first thing I notice is how they treat other people.
Nice.
And that's it's important for me to kind of zero in on.
What is your one deal breaker?
Bad smell, bad hygiene.
Mm. What turns you on?
Talent.
Nice one. Tell us one of your strengths and one of your weaknesses in dating and relationships.
My strengths and my weaknesses. I always have something to talk about that's either a strength or a weakness. My weakness, and I always strive to be a better listener. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I can get carried away. Like if I get really zeroed in and excited about something, I can get carried away. And that can leave someone feeling neglected, either in just being part of the conversation or if there's a group of people that someone I'm dating might feel like I'm not paying enough attention to them. Mm. So I see that as probably a drawback.
Finally, besides I love you, What three words would you want your partner to tell you?
It's your birthday.
Nice. Thanks to Matt Kennedy from Podsequentialism for being on the show. Matt, where can people find you on socials?
Okay, I have a bunch. So I'm at Podsequentialism or at Podsec, P-O-D-S-E-Q, at La Luz de Jesus for La Luz de Jesus Gallery, which is L-A-Z. No, it isn't. It's L-A-L-U-Z-D-E-J-E-S-U-S. And just started a new space, which is my wife's atelier space called Gallery 30 South. That's Gallery 30 South, and that's in Pasadena. And as we record this, and of course, it's probably a waste to say because they'll be gone, but we're able to give away a lot of Shepherd Fairey posters today for the protest that will be this weekend of the inauguration. But you can follow me in those places and Panic Collective, P-A-N-I-K Collective.
Thank you. And guys, support Matt Kennedy and Podsequentialism and the rest of our shows at the Meltdown Network. We are also on socials. You can follow us at Kinda Dating on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And finally, Kinda Dating is presented by Meltdown Comics. Come visit us at 7522 Sunset Boulevard here in LA. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. And please take a few minutes and review us on iTunes. And hey, guys, we have an email. So tell us your stories at kindadating@gmail.com. And finally, I know it seems tough out there, but just try. Till next time. The show is produced by myself and Mason Booker, who's also the audio engineer. Our associate producer is Aisha Holden. Opening music composed by Joe Lorenzetti. And our logo and graphics are by Jenna Yannick and K. Daniel Ellis.